are people past 40. Your risk rises sharply if you smoke cigarettes, cigars, or a pipe, or chew tobacco, especially when you combine nicotine use with heavy alcohol intake. So when brushing and flossing, be sure to check your mouth for red or white patches. If you have a mouth sore that won't heal or a lump anywhere in your mouth, see your dentist. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez-Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org. Each year, Americans die of oral cancer, even though...
Trees are great. They're something we should all appreciate. Did you know trees can add value to your home, help cool your home and neighborhood, and break the cold winds to lower your heating costs and provide food for wildlife? So plant some trees today.
Yes, did you know that? Did you know that about trees? It's fascinating. Hey, this is WUSB Stony Brook. It is exactly 6:01 p.m. on Tuesday, July 5th. It's time for Off the Wall. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, yes, this is Off the Wall, and I am Kyle, joined by Emmanuel, who's over there.
Do you hear that hum in my ear?
Yeah, what is it?
I don't know, something that we didn't notice before.
Okay. Well, what that might have to do with is normalization, which is this thing.
Might have to do with the temperature being 95 degrees in here again.
Where you turn certain things down and.
I can't be heard like that. Listen to that. That's awful. That's a terrible sound.
Yeah, that's like a hum, like a bad hum.
Yeah.
I'm not going to mess with your channel. That's fine. That I can.
Something's not grounded or something
is.
Yeah, just.
We're broadcasting from Stony Brook University. Maybe it's...
No, it's not. It's not all the fans that people have set up here to keep the air circulating.
It's not the fan. Broadcasting from Stony Brook University, where it is quite warm. And as we said, off the wall, we're here with lots to talk about.
Yes.
And, well, we wanted to know how everyone's fourth went. That's the Independence Day holiday, if you're unfamiliar with it. And I lit off some firecrackers. I hadn't done that in so long. It had been like maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years. So long I forgot how long it had been since I lit a firework. And you have to do it quite carefully. Sometimes you use a punk, something that's smoldering instead of a lighter, because lighters maybe get out of control. I don't know. I remembered all the little like things that you have to do as far as safety protocol and, you know, keeping yourself. And I remember the first one I did of the season, I looked at it and just at the last minute I remembered, okay, you need to turn away now and like leave that behind you. And I did, and it works, and it went off, and it was really loud, and I was really glad it wasn't right under my eyeball when it did go off. So that was really exciting, and I think that is a small example of what everybody experienced for the holiday.
Well, not me. I stayed inside. I was doing all kinds of... Oh, you fixed it. Okay, whatever you did, you fixed it.
Yeah,
just don't
Sorry about that.
Because you'll break it again if you touch anything.
Yeah, okay, that may have been my fault. I apologize profusely.
You keep your cotton-picking hands off that, because now I can't hear myself anymore.
Okay, well, we're here.
All right, well, at least the hum is gone.
How come you didn't light off any fireworks?
Indoors, you don't want me lighting off fireworks indoors, do you?
I had a bottle rocket that I really wanted to light off with you.
Here's the thing, you know, the fireworks that you were using actually had been sitting around for so long. I figured out when we got those fireworks. We got them on the Freedom Downtime initial trip when we went out to film various people to interview for the movie we made. About Kevin Mitnick being imprisoned. We did that in 1998, so those fireworks are almost 20 years old, and it's just incredible. So when you find unexploded ordnance from, you know, a prior war, you better believe it's still good, it still works. So that's that was a sobering indication that fireworks last for decades as well.
Yeah, yeah, and they're safe, everybody. They're in a metal ammo container, and... they're all in one place.
Yeah, right by the fireplace.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Well,
under the ashtray.
Uh-huh. It was loud. It definitely was as fireworky as you could possibly...
I didn't get into the other ones. We have some more, but it's definitely... It's like a time capsule, so to speak. In fact, these were... they had, like, Y2K... like branding and
because they
labels.
Were ahead of their time. Y2K hadn't happened
That's right.
yet.
And that was a big thing to look forward to, so to speak.
as you can see, they operate well into the next century, so no problem there.
They were compliant.
But what a weird holiday 4th of July is, because, you know, in most parts of the world, you know, I was hearing what sounded like cannons and explosions of all sorts, and I don't mean official fireworks displays. I mean, I don't know what people had access to or how they got it, but you just hear explosions coming from, you know, if we had mountains, they'd be coming from the mountains. It just sounded like a revolution was in progress. Of course, it wasn't, because it never does happen here. But in other parts of the world, if you heard noises like that, people would be taking cover and being kind of terrified. In this country, we kind of mock all that just by exploding things for fun.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You should enjoy the fireworks, but I think with a certain, I think, respect. I think there's part of it where it, I don't want to take too much joy in it, I think, because of that. There's like this looming sense that this is a little bit too silly for the seriousness of the history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, our national anthem mentions bombs bursting in air. I wonder what kind of bombs there were that burst in air in the 1700s. I guess they were cannonballs, right? What else could they have been? So the whole country pretty much was founded on making loud noise and exploding things.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different reasons and different munition types that are used in battle. So some have different purposes, and maybe that was a reference. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what. Maybe a flare of some kind. They don't say flare in there.
No, they say bomb. They know what they're talking about.
Some kind of signaling. No, it's really it's a weapon, I think, that they're referring to.
How many national anthems glorify bombs? I'd like to know that, because it just seems kind of strange that that's what we focus upon, is things exploding in the sky. And we still hold on to that to this day. We're throwing bombs all over the place. We do it more than anybody else, I think. This is a country that was founded on the bomb. I don't know why we glorify guns. We should be glorifying bombs.
Cluster munitions explode in the air.
Well, that's not in the national anthem.
And we still use those a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else do we have to talk about?
There's a lot, actually. I don't know where to begin. Let me just start quickly by saying that Iceland almost made it into the semifinals of Euro.
Would you look at that?
Iceland. Think about it. It's the smallest country that was in the tournament probably ever. They have 300,000 people in the whole country, and yet they were somehow able to beat England last week, and what an embarrassment that was right after the Brexit, and they beat the Netherlands twice. They didn't even qualify for the whole tournament, and they had to meet France on their home turf. That didn't go too well, but they still they scored two goals. They were greeted in Iceland as heroes. We saw some footage of that, and boy, it seemed like everybody in Iceland was out cheering them on. And yeah, you know, it's only football, it's only a sport, but still, it matters, you know? It gets you into something, and I don't see how that could be considered a bad thing. Iceland is really happy and proud. A lot of people are going to Iceland now, too. So I think something like this can bring out the good in people. Yeah, you can see it bring out the bad in people, but there are so many instances where good things happen as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. It really is cool to shine the light on different locations, places you wouldn't necessarily think are playing soccer all the time. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of heartening. It's cool to see, and also you get a taste of their culture, as you've pointed out a couple times now, of like the traditions, the songs, the chant, the even the dress, the kind of like costume and stuff that's involved in the pageantry, what kind of scarves or banners and insignia they have, the different stories and real trials that some of their players go through, and the families and the countries socioeconomically or whatever else historically, as you've mentioned, the records and all that interesting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people didn't realize Iceland was part of Europe. Yeah, they are. And, boy, did they surprise everybody this year. And so it comes down to the semifinals now, which begin tomorrow. And, you know, it, in the end, you wind up pretty much with the same powerhouses that dominate the sport. You have Germany, you have France, you have Portugal, and you have Wales. Yeah, Wales is another one. Wales somehow has made it to the semifinals. England, they're out. Northern Ireland, they're out. Republic of Ireland, they're out. But Wales has survived. Scotland was never even in. It's really kind of strange to see this. But tomorrow they play Portugal, and I hope they win. I really do. Only because I don't like Ronaldo. I think he's a bit of a jerk.
He is.
He really is. He threw that reporter's microphone into a lake. And
I
heard he wouldn't trade jerseys with Iceland after they played in the tournament because they didn't think they were worthy or something. It's just, you know, very full of himself, and I don't like that kind of attitude.
He's a relentless playboy.
Yeah, it seems that way. So anyway, that's the sporting news for this week.
Well, I'm so glad we covered that, and there is a lot going on with that. Of course, Olympics will be coming up in several weeks, and we'll have other coverage of interesting sports, mm-hmm. interesting types of competition, and we'll definitely come back to that as it plays out.
Here's a question for you.
I watched a little rugby the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, I was watching a little bit.
See, that sport really it makes American football seem so tame, and yet they don't wear all the armaments that that they do in American football.
No, but it's a level field, so to speak, and they lob the ball as they do and tackle and stuff.
And
but
they keep going.
It's just like soccer in a lot of ways. Very physical,
mm-hmm.
but there are certain things you do and don't. You know, rules of the road and ways to behave and the coordination. I mean, there's not these huge, huge tackles
uh-huh.
like you see with the NFL where people are stacked up with all this armor and stuff. They more or less have like a little fumble, a little like scuffle, diving or whatever for the ball, and then it moves quickly to more movement around the field to make the next play.
And there are other sports like that. I mean, hurling, you know, that Irish game.
That's right. We got turned on to that when we were visiting in Ireland.
And Aussie rules football, whatever that is. There's all kinds of variations out there. So it's you'll never get tired looking for varieties of this kind of thing. Where was I going before you veered off to rugby? I was about to say something, I totally forgot. It's the heat.
Well, no, all the Euro stuff and other sports stuff that we're anticipating results and it's something we're following in the background, including stuff here on campus. You know, Stony Brook's got great stuff going on, and we're always eager to hear about their soccer program and new and exciting things they're doing here.
Oh, indeed, yes. New and exciting things, including our new studio somewhere on campus.
Yeah, we've noticed. Should we share our little?
I think we've seen it.
We've seen the new space. It's two pallets of cinder blocks.
It's you can see it yourself too. It's in the parking lot as you drive towards the Union. And every week we pass it by and we say, "Oh, it's coming along nicely."
Look, the station, it has another cinder block.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Wait, look, it's almost three parking spaces wide.
I'll tell you what, it'd be cooler if we were there now.
It would be.
Yeah.
It would be. It would be. So, that's all part of
what's
coming up. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, because before you veered me off onto the sidetrack there.
You know, I was going to tell you a story.
You're going to do it again? Look, you mentioned the Olympics, okay?
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, Kyle, what Olympics are you talking about? Please define further.
The extra special Olympics.
No, let's not be a wise ass at the same time. Let's answer the question like a normal person. What Olympics are we talking about here?
The Rusev Olympics?
You see, you're still being a wise ass. Just, you know, assume that you're a mainstream commentator.
Rio?
NBC. Okay, Rio. Now you've piqued my interest. What are...
Rio?
And more... I wish I could do that. More description of what these games are? What are they exactly?
The Rio Summer
Summer Olympics.
Olympics.
But, Kyle, I'm confused. They're taking place in Brazil. It's winter in Brazil. Why aren't these called the Winter Olympics? You
because
know, it seems to me this is some northern hemispheric prejudice going on here.
It's oppression.
It is. It's. I mean, why in God's name are we calling it the Summer Olympics when it's not even summer?
They're imposing their imperial Olympic weather weather systems from the northern hemisphere.
Well, I don't know exactly
what's at
play here, but nobody has brought this up. And I only figured it out when I was down there. You know, it took me a couple of days, but I realized, you know, it doesn't feel like winter. It's like in the 80s, but still, it's your winter. You call it winter. And wait a minute, the Olympics are coming up in a couple of months, and it's still going to be winter, but they're the Summer Olympics.
They're wearing coats down there. It's a relative summer compared to a lot of the places where Olympians are coming from. I mean, if you're an Olympian in Vladivostok, it's going to be summer to you.
So just because it's warmer there, they can call it summer.
Well, because I believe the summer games are activities you associate with warmer weather. Does that make sense?
Okay, so basically what you're saying is whenever you're indoors, it's summertime because
it's
warm inside. I mean, basketball is played in the winter, but it's summertime when you're playing basketball because it's warm while you're playing it.
Right. It's sort of a warm weather sport.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was
no,
going
go on.
Use,
I'm
no, I was going to use snow sports as well, but there's all kinds of indoor skiing and snow hills they've built artificially.
You know what you deserve? You deserve to have the Winter Olympics in Brazil. Okay, because then it's going to be like 130 degrees, and you're going to be trying to ski down some kind of mountain over there and not doing well and winding up embedded in mud, all right? And you deserve it because you're applying your seasons to a different hemisphere. It's not right, Kyle.
So where do you think the Olympics should have taken place?
Well, I didn't say they shouldn't be taking place there. That's just, you know, they're not summer Olympics, but it's not summer.
But wait a minute. Everybody is going to watch this, right?
No.
And they're all going to watch it on American TV.
No, definitely not.
The American TV summer.
If I were to watch it, which I'm not going to, but if I were, I'd watch it on Canadian TV. Only because they're not so fixated on all the American athlete sob stories that have nothing to do with what's actually going on. So, I would do that if I were to watch it, which I'm not going to. I'm more likely to be watching the aftermath of what happens in Cleveland and Philadelphia, which, do you know, in 2 weeks, 2 weeks is when the Republican convention begins.
Let's see,
that's trust me. You don't have to check my math. 14 days, yeah, 7 times 2.
Just over a baker's dozen.
Yeah, okay, fine. You could look at it that way. So that's when it's all going to hit the fan in Cleveland. The convention where Donald Trump is going to be nominated as the nominee. There's probably a better way to say that. But that's where it's going to happen officially. That's where he's going to officially announce a vice presidential candidate who, I'm wary of. I don't know who he's going to pick, but, if it's somebody that has any respect whatsoever, it might be enough for people to be able to hold their noses when they vote for Trump, knowing that, you know, they're just one heartbeat away from somebody who's actually qualified.
So you're saying it's going to be someone who's distinct. He's going to pick someone who's very different from him, something that maybe people could like and appreciate their differences as a ticket.
I would be happy if he picks somebody like Sarah Palin because, you know, she's out of her mind.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, you know, it's fodder for a lot of amusement.
Right.
But I don't think, I don't think he's going to pick her. But, B, I don't think he's going to pick somebody of that ilk because his advisors are probably telling him, look, you're the crazy one. You got to pick somebody who's, you know, somewhat mainstream that will be accepted by the populace. So I'm a little worried about that. But then that could be countered by who Clinton picks as her vice presidential running mate. I sure hope it's Elizabeth Warren. I really do. Boy, she is amazing as far as just whenever she speaks, she's got such energy. She is not afraid of a fight. She is not afraid to stand up for what she believes in. And if you want to have the Bernie Sanders people, and you're going to need the Bernie Sanders people to win the election, you need to pick somebody that they like. And I don't think anybody exceeds Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, she's definitely energetic and likable in that role. I think if they can make it work, if politically and so on, as long as there's support, I think both in the campaign itself on the Democratic side and also from people, intelligent people who have been supporters all along. I mean, they need to give the candidates a chance to change and broaden their appeal a little.
I'm just so sick of people saying that we're not ready for two women on the ticket.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's just, really, have we gotten anywhere? You know, it's
we've been due.
If you can say, wow, we've finally gotten to the point where we can have a woman president, and then you turn around and say, but we're not ready to have a woman vice president at the same time as a woman president. You know what? We haven't actually gotten to the point where we're okay with having a woman president, obviously, because you're making conditions.
Well, and you need to pay attention to the government, because there's a lot of women in the House as well as the Senate and on down into states, capitals, and congresses.
So now let's talk about the elephant. That's not in this room, thank God, but the elephant being Donald Trump. That whole tweet that went out a few days ago, that was supposedly anti-Semitic because it had the Star of David accusing Hillary of being crooked and having a picture of money in the background. And the accusation there is that this is a known anti-Semitic expression, using the Star of David, showing money and accusing somebody of being corrupt. And the Trump campaign's reaction to this is being questioned as insufficient, suspicious, guilty. What do you think?
What do I think? Well, I saw the graphic. I think it's Much Ado About Something really silly in the grand scheme. Don't jump on me right away. But I think it's really silly example specific circumstance to have to defend or explain or try to sort out. But that said, it basically is like a clip art of, yes, a Star of David, and the text is oriented as it would be a star. Now, he's arguing it is, what, a law enforcement?
Well, he says that it's similar to a sheriff's badge. I'm looking right now at a whole bunch of sheriff's badges, and there's maybe one there that looks kind of like a Star of David. The rest don't really look like that. Here's my take on it. I think it's a reach. I don't think the Trump campaign said, hey, let's get the Jews and have all this anti-Semitism sparked at this particular point in the campaign. And we can do that by somehow implicating Hillary Clinton and putting a Star of David next to her, right, along with all these dollar bills or whatever in the background. If you think about it, why in God's name would they do that? It doesn't really make sense. The right-wing Zionist vote is something that that Donald Trump would want in the first place. If anything, he's anti-Arab. He's anti-Muslim. And that's the kind of thing I would expect him to actually put forth. So, no, I don't think they set out to be anti-Semitic. What I do think is that they're incredibly dumb and clueless, not realizing that this particular graphical display means something beyond what they think it means. I'm not sure where they got it from. I think they picked it off somebody's Twitter feed. If they had investigated a little bit or looked into how these things actually are put together, they might have realized, hey, there's more to this than just a political statement. There's actually a background of anti-Semitism here. But I don't think they set out to do that. I think they just didn't know what they were doing. And I think that's worse.
Yeah, yeah, I think absolutely. And there may have been some subconscious stuff, but I don't really understand. I don't think you can really definitive without evidence or of malice. I don't think you could really pin that down. I could see it as it being a subconscious characteristic of someone working on the campaign.
Uh-huh.
But I also see it as a shape. It's a shape that is of a palette of shapes and stuff that are usually built into a lot of these programs. And you would just simply make it whatever size and then fill it in with a color.
Well, I'll tell you, graphically, it looked good. It looked good with the star, a lot better than with the round circle that replaced
it. You could see more of her face.
Well, yeah, that's true. But the circle, that didn't do anything. It was just, it looked boring. But the star,
My thing is, if you're going to pick a star, there's plenty of other examples of a
better star. Stars, yes.
Or, I guess, that sort of award medallion kind of thing with spiky edges, like a starburst shape.
Uh-huh.
I think there's plenty to pick from, and someone involved in the campaign that's creating imagery and stuff for mass consumption would take those kinds of shapes into consideration. I know as a photographer or, as any kind of visual artist, maybe you don't attach meaning to things, but you have to be aware on some level of the meanings and associations that society or other individuals might place on things. And to be, especially in PR, I think you'd be negligent to not be considerate of what shapes mean to the vast majority of people and how that could be perceived as I said, a subconscious tendency, bias, whatever, towards a certain political point of view or not, that you're implying this candidate has.
I think he would have recognized it if it looked like, the Star of David we usually see, where it's not completely filled in on all sections, where it's like, two triangles basically at opposite ends.
Okay, can I?
He would have said, hey, that's, I know that from someplace. I can't place it at the moment, but that's probably not something that we want to use in an ad. But when you fill it in, it could look like a regular, star of one sort or another. So I think he would have, he probably just missed that. Now he's all defensive about it, which is basically one of his familiar ways of dealing with things. Yeah, and you're pointing out some graphics of
filled-in Star of David.
Like the kind people would wear.
Would be attached to garments
mm-hmm.
during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They'd be yellow.
Yeah.
Okay, if we're familiar. So there's an entire other part of history that is attached.
But this one was red. This one was red.
Not other. I mean, related.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, distinct and specific to that particular shape. And I am absolutely certain that's part of this, and it's valid in my opinion. It's not fine, the standard star on the flag or whatnot is one thing, but what was used by Nazi Germany
mm-hmm.
to label people
right.
was an entirely specific and similar icon or symbol.
Right. And just like swastikas, which, I think he would get that sooner. He would say, yeah, wait a minute, we're not supposed to use those. Even though swastikas, too, are used by Native Americans, they're used in India, they're used in Thailand for completely different groups of people, obviously. But in this particular case, I think it wasn't quite as obvious, certainly to people that don't know history. And this just shows that he doesn't know history, he doesn't understand implications, doesn't understand what could set people off. I think the Democrats are going a little nuts with it as far as saying that this was intentional and that he knew exactly what he was doing. No, I don't think, it's Donald Trump, I don't think he knows at all what he's doing. But it shows how he can be completely offensive and clueless at the same time. So, That's how I read it, as just another example, you know.
It is. It just piled on. And I think it's also, it was reminiscent of that whole dress thing, like what color is the dress? I felt like that. Like, we have to, like, evaluate every piece of media that's created in what has been a circus, a complete extravaganza of craziness that we call a political season, to pick one thing and now be, you know, swipe left or swipe right for which Hillary graphic you like or prefer or is ethical, I think is insane. And I don't know. I don't want to participate, but I guess we have to.
But, you know, I'm intrigued by what's going to be happening in 2 weeks when Cleveland begins. There are going to be all kinds of people showing up. And the restrictions I find to be incredibly offensive. You know, free speech zones. I've never believed in free speech zones. Free speech should be everywhere, not just in a penned-in cage that the police tell you you're allowed to chant something here. People should be able to demonstrate. They should be able to march wherever they feel like. And, you know, it's really incredible because you see how certain rights are respected, certain perceived rights. So, yeah, you can walk around with a loaded gun, not a problem. No one's going to tell you you can't have a loaded gun in this particular section. They won't let you in the actual convention building, I believe, but they will let you walk around amongst all the demonstrators. But, you know, demonstrators, you can't have a sleeping bag. You can't have a ladder. You can't have all sorts of, I mean, ridiculous things that they're restricting people from having. But a loaded gun is just fine because that's considered a right. But other forms of expression are not, and they're being curtailed as much as possible. I think you're going to see some backlash to that. I think you'll see some real anger, and it's not going to be limited to Cleveland either. You're going to see some in Philadelphia as well, which is the following week. And it's funny because our conference is right between the two. You have the craziness in Cleveland with the Republicans. You've got the whole Packer convention. And then you got the craziness with the Democrats in Philadelphia. It's going to be action-packed. We might have to put our show on tape, actually, for those weeks, because I don't know how we're going to be able to fit it all in. But it's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. I can't wait. I think we'll all be better after we really see what these politicians are made of in this very quickly approaching primary, or I guess general
primaries
election.
Yeah, they're done. It's the convention now, and then the full-fledged campaign, and wow,
it's gonna
get ugly.
The vote is in November, right?
Yeah, so I mean, right now they're both in North Carolina.
That's
you know, buying ads and campaigning and accusing of various things. And that's just a microcosm of what we have to look forward to.
Yes. A microcosm. Is there anything else?
Nope, I'm done.
Yeah. let's see. I have that ready. I would say we could take some phone calls, but you know what? Just write. Just write us something. OTW@2600.com. I don't want to talk to you.
Why?
So,
why don't you want to talk to people?
What? It's hot. I don't even think I could lift the receiver.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. But you know, we've run out of things to say, and if there are people out there with something to say, well, if we see the phone ring, how about if we see a bunch of calls come in, then we'll start the delay machine, which is always it's heavy. It's
I'll probably knock something over.
Yeah, it'll knock something over for sure. Might as well just get it over with now. Here's another thing. You have to dial the area code now. We didn't talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
This just started happening out in Long Island. Used to be you could just dial 7 digits. I could say, if you're on Long Island or Suffolk County, dial 632-6901. And, of course, from campus, you only have to dial 5 digits because, well, it makes sense to have an internal phone system work that way. But now they've decided that we have to dial the area code as well. Because we're getting more area codes, apparently, but there's no reason in the world why you should have to dial the area code for every call you make, especially if it's your own area code. I don't see the logic. It's just bad programming. But you can no longer dial 632-6901, as far as I know, from anywhere. You have to dial 631-632-6901. to reach us. So I'm sorry about that. I don't know how much time is going to be lost by people having to dial these extra three digits every time they pick up the damn phone. And God help you if you have a rotary dial phone.
It's not our fault. I mean, we did not have anything to do with this.
It's not our fault, no.
It's good for you. It's good exercise. There's more digits.
No, it's stupid exercise.
You should be thankful that there's touch tones.
Here's the thing, okay? Try dialing 632-6901 without the area code. What do you get? You get a recording telling you you have to dial 631. Now, if they can have a recording there that says, I know what you want to do. You want to call 631-632-6901, so you have to hang up and dial 631. That's just a bunch of passive-aggressive crap that the phone company is throwing your way. Why can't they just complete the call then? You know, they know what you want to dial. They know what you're doing. It's living proof that we're not going to have a 631 exchange anytime soon. All right, so there's no confusion there. There's no reason in the world why they can't just assume that you're calling a local number when you dial that particular sequence.
Yeah. It's unfair, but times they are a-changing.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, that gets us into any situation. I know a lot of the country has been doing this for a while. I believe where you come from, you've been dialing 10 digits.
Yeah, the overlays and 10 digits are it's really crazy because you know, like, 360 is up north, but it's also way far south, and everything kind of encapsulates around Seattle and the 206, and then you have 253 to the south, and then also displaced in other parts. So I could call, you'd end up with these weird things where you could call Tacoma, which is very far away from Seattle, and it would be in 253. But you could not call Seattle, which is much closer, because you're in 253, that's 206.
Wait, what do you mean you couldn't call Seattle?
Like, you could not dial, you'd have to dial an area code, and it'd be long distance.
Oh.
Long distance.
You know, okay, look, I have two solutions, but the reason why they can't implement this is because of their old technology and bad programming. Okay, you have the one. You dial one for long distance. That was the whole point of the one. Now, for some reason, you don't have to dial the 1 anymore if you're dialing 631 within 631. Oh, great. Okay.
Right.
we saved the little 1 that we don't have to dial.
Right.
But if the 1 meant anything at all, it meant that an area code was coming afterwards. I know there are exceptions where sometimes you would dial 1 plus 7 digits in weird-ass areas of the country when you had a toll call for a 7-digit number. Okay, fine. You don't have to have that, but if you want to indicate an area code, in other words, 10 more digits coming, you dial one first. Otherwise, you let people just dial the 7 digits like they always did. What's wrong with that? Or the second solution that I have, use the pound sign as a return key. And then you could say, okay, I'm just going to dial 7 digits, hit pound, I'm done. That's how you know I'm finished dialing. And that way you can go back to 4-digit dialing. You can say, you know, I'm in the same exchange. Hey, we're in 632. Well, this is a bad example because we actually can do this on an internal phone system. But if we were in 632 in the real world, we would just dial 6901, pound, and we're done, you know?
Yeah, they'd rather sell each individual institution a PBX and stuff like that and dumb down their own service to individual residents and so on, and or make their service have tiers of packaging instead of actually run their system for customers like a PBX.
I don't think it's that thought out. I think it's just very bad programming, antiquated systems, and not changing with the times. Look, when they started introducing new area codes, they did it in a really half-assed way, so that area codes don't mean anything anymore. You just mentioned 253 and 360. Hell, I knew Washington State as 206. That's what it was, 206. And I believe 206 was the entire state. You know, you could tell that, too, because the middle digit was zero. And if the middle digit was zero, that meant it covered the entire state. New Mexico, 505, entire state. Hawaii, 808, entire state. Alaska, 907. So the more sparsely populated states tended to have zeros in the middle, whereas states like New York, 212, 516, 518, 716, you know, the one in the middle meant that there were multiple area codes that covered the same state. Connecticut, 203, so only one area code. Massachusetts, 617.
I think there's a
413, I think.
I think there's a 518 or 08 or something.
518
like
is Albany.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a 5 area code in Washington State somewhere. I think it's for the eastern Washington. I can't remember what it is.
Okay. No, I
516 or something.
Okay, 516 was my area code, Kyle.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Before they came and took it.
No, it's now, 5.
No, you're going to get me really emotional here because 516 was my area code, all right? And they stole that from us. Nassau County. Nassau County took that area code for themselves and gave us 631. You think I grew up on 631? What a stupid area code that is, 631. No, we were 516. 516. The one in the middle makes sense. Everybody knew where things were. But because of the way they implemented new area codes, they were running out of phone numbers because they were just handing them out like candy. Okay, there's two ways you could have dealt with that and kept the geographical area codes so that they made sense. You could have extended phone numbers to 8 digits. Yeah, countries do that. 8 digits instead of 7 digits. You could have done that, or you could have had 4-digit area codes. And that way, you would have 5161, 5162, 5163, all area codes, and you'd keep the geographic notation there. And that would have made it so simple. But no, now instead we have 253s and 360s and 631s and area codes that don't mean anything. And it's just sad. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get so emotional about this, but when I see people out there dialing 10 digits to order a pizza, it's just something about it really rubs me the wrong way. And it's just, it's not what I signed up for.
Yeah, it's 509.
The other area code in
Washington.
Okay, yeah.
So that's probably 253-425-360 and 509.
509 was Spokane, right? That's the other side.
It's interesting because there's also a road 509 in Washington.
Like New Jersey was 201 and 609 before all the other ones started coming in.
So did you hear Boston's going to get 5G? I heard a Verizon exec talking about 5G wireless and its emergence. And they're also, you know, they were talking about Fios, and I just want to say this, like, she used the example of Fios and fiber optics being beneficial in an emergency because I thought that was so twisted because we often talk about and we know about how central office systems are powered and have their own battery systems. And I thought that was hilarious because she's right up to a certain point because you would have to hack the customer premise equipment they give you and supply it better battery power than what comes with it because I think it only has a couple hours and so on and so forth. She is right, though. Optics are a little bit more resilient. What else was going on? What was going on with telephones that we wanted to mention?
I don't know, but
I'm drawing a blank.
We're running out of time here. We don't have Finnis at the door. And unfortunately, we're just going to have to come back to this, I think. I'm sorry. You can write to us, otw@2600.com, with your comments and thoughts and suggestions and other things like that.
Oh, we used a link kiosk. We didn't talk about that. We don't have any time to talk about it.
We have no time. Maybe we can talk about it on the show tomorrow.
What did you think of it, though?
It was cool. It was interesting.
We dialed the phone number.
We broke it right away.
Yeah, we did.
All right. Listen, we're out of time. It's too hot in here. We'll see you next week. Bye.